Welcome. My name is Asam Stolu. I'm a trainee editor of the UEG Journal, and you're listening to the UEG Journal podcast. Each episode will highlight one of the most relevant articles recently published in the journal, with the purpose of learning from the most recent evidence and to provide a platform for authors to discuss the most important findings of their research. Hi, everyone, and welcome back to the UEG Journal podcast. My name is Asa Nastolo, and I'm one of the trainee editors of the journal. And today, it is my absolute pleasure to be joined by Dr. Iris Levink.
She is actually a fellow colleague from the UEG Journal editors. So I'm really excited to have her here with us to talk about her recent publication. So today we'll be talking about the paper recently published in the UEG Journal titled The Additive Value of CA19.9 Monitoring in a Pancreatic Cyst Surveillance Program. Thank you so much for joining us, Iris. Please, can you start by talking about where you work and introduce your colleagues to us as well?
I am a PhD candidate at the Department of Gastroenterology and Hepatology of Erasmus Medical Center in Rotterdam, the Netherlands. It's an absolute honor to be part of UEG Journal podcast, as I'm a big fan myself. This publication is part of the PACIFIC trial, which aims to evaluate the yield of pancreas surveillance in individuals with suspected neoplastic cysts, such as IPMN and MCN, for the earlier detection of pancreatic cancer. This trial has been set up in 2015 by my mentors, Juna Kahan and Marco Prudo, among others. The PACIFIC trial is a unique collaboration between more than 50 academic and peripheral hospitals in Europe and Northern America. So it's a real group effort. More centers are being added each year, so listeners must perform surveillance in individuals with pancreatic cysts and be interested to participate. Feel free to register yourself via the PACIFIC website. As the background risk of pancreatic cancer in IPMN is low at around 3%, high patient numbers are required to draw definite conclusions about the yields and the cost effectiveness of pancreas surveillance.
Wow, so it sounds like PACIFIC trial is actually pretty big, with more than 50 hospitals and academic hospitals as well throughout Europe and Northern America. Could you talk to us a little bit more about the overview of the PACIFIC registry and the study design?
Of course, thank you. The PACIFIC trial is an observational cohort study that includes individuals with newly and previously diagnosed as well as operated pancreatic cysts that require surveillance. These individuals are being followed over time upon discretion by the treating physician. This means, in short, that the treating physician remains responsible for patient management and decision making. If a follow-up parameters change during follow-up, the decision for a more elaborate diagnostic workup, but also intensified frequency of follow-up or surgery, is based on the treating physician. This generates a valuable database that will eventually show the effect of certain management choices on both earlier detection and harm associated with pancreas surveillance.
Okay, thank you for that. So I understand that in this study, looked at serum carbohydrate antigen 19.9, also known as CA19.9, which is a tumor marker that's been recommended by the European guidelines as a relative indicator for pancreatic cancer. But obviously, this was based on retrospective studies. So how do the findings of your study contradict the guidelines?
Currently, four major pancreatic cyst guidelines are being used in clinical practice. Two American guidelines, one so-called the international guideline, which is initiated in Japan, and one European guideline. The American AGA guideline does not mention CA19.9 at all. The other three do interpret an elevated CA19.9 of more than 37 as worrisome feature or relative indication for surgery. However, the indication for assessing this value is not stated in these guidelines. Recommendations are indeed based on surgical series, and the cutoff at 37 has never been critically appraised. The current study aimed to evaluate the role of serum CA19.9 monitoring in individuals undergoing pancreatic cyst surveillance within the PACIFIC trial. We included 685 individuals with a known baseline CA99 level who had undergone at least 12 months of follow-up. Of these, 4% developed high-grade dysplasia or pancreatic cancer during a median follow-up period of 25 months. We showed that CA99 as a continuous value or higher than the 37 cutoff is not associated with the development of high-grade dysplasia or pancreatic cancer. Our data even indicate that CA99 monitoring leads to harm due to an intensified frequency of follow-up or surgery.
Okay, so you mentioned that it looks like CA19.9 isn't associated with development of high-grade dysplasia, but was there any correlation whatsoever between CA19.9 and the risk of developing dysplasia at all? You know, was it possible to analyze this kind of question with your data set?
Yeah, it's an important question because the aim is to earlier detect high-grade dysplasia or T1 cancer. But firstly, in our cohort, only 14 individuals were diagnosed with high-grade dysplasia, of which three had an elevated value. So we are unable to draw solid conclusions. This percentage is similar to that of low-grade dysplasia, yet is much lower than the 40% in pancreatic cancer. Our data, but also previous surgical series, implicate that CA99 is rather a marker of advanced disease and may not support earlier detection of high-grade dysplasia or T1 disease.
So the 5-year survival rate for pancreatic cancer, we know, is the poorest amongst all the cancers that we know of. And the lack of a specific biomarker to aid its early detection seems to be one of the underlying problems. As you mentioned, even CA19.9 is more to look at advanced disease rather than the early detection. So what do you think the research community needs to focus on in order to detect this cancer earlier?
Yeah, that's a difficult question because this has been proven to be difficult specifically for pancreatic cancer. For instance, molecular analyses are frequently performed for detection, characterization, or treatment response prediction in multiple other cancer types. But for pancreatic cancer, it's associated with relatively low concentrations of circulating tumor DNA. And for instance, gene mutations are often only detectable in blood of patients with locally advanced or metastatic disease. For this and other reasons, we have shifted our focus to pancreatic juice. Pancreatic juice is a promising biomarker source as it can be safely collected during an endoscopic ultrasound after intravenous stimulation by secretin. Additionally, as it has been in close contact with the ductal cells from which pancreatic cancer originates, it is expected to constitute a washout of the pancreatic ductal system. Thus far, we have performed cross-sectional studies and meta-analysis comparing patients with pancreatic cancer with controls undergoing pancreatic surveillance. We showed that not only specific gene mutations in pancreatic juice, such as CDKN2A, SMAT4, and TP53, are highly specific for pancreatic cancer, but also epigenetic changes, concentration of proteins, and expression of exosomal microRNAs in pancreatic juice has been highly specific. Currently, we are focusing on the consecutive sampling of samples within our Pacific cohort to evaluate if there are biomarker changes over time in those developing pancreatic cancer.
Wow, that's really interesting because obviously the concept of liquid biopsies and novel way of detecting these biomarkers is becoming more and more popular, I think, in many different types of gastrointestinal cancers. But I had no idea that pancreatic juice was being looked at as a promising biomarker source as well. So, well, forgive my naivety as a research scientist by background, but is an endoscopic ultrasound done routinely for patients with pancreatic cysts or anyone with risk of developing pancreatic cancer, or is it only really done for patients that are known to be already at risk or already having known dysplasia? And as part of the Pacific trial, I understand that you're looking at samples that have been already collected, but are you looking to actually collect fresh pancreatic juice samples as part of the study to do these molecular tests that you mentioned, to look at the levels of different biomarker candidates of choice, or to validate any of these markers that you've listed, like TP53 or SMAD4, which aren't common tumor markers, I guess, but to look at more kind of pancreatic cancer specific markers, I guess?
Yeah, to start with the first question. So based on the guidelines, the treating physician can choose between endoscopic ultrasound and MRI. There are some benefits of MRI, MRTP, or endoscopic ultrasound. And for example, with endoscopic ultrasound, you can collect pancreatic juice, but there is a limit of patients that can be seen in an endoscopic ultrasound practice. Generally, in most practices, MRCP is used, and in case of any suspicion of pancreatic cancer, an endoscopic ultrasound could be performed. So the second question is, what is the goal of the collection of pancreatic juice and what we are going to analyze in this fluid? So each collection is performed during 8 minutes. And during these 8 minutes, we collect 15 milliliters of pancreatic juice. So 15 milliliters is quite a lot. And you can do a lot of analysis with that volume. So we will definitely also perform these analyses on consecutively collected samples, but we are also free to perform additional analysis.
That's amazing. So essentially anyone who enrolls in the Pacific trial can become part of this study, and they can contribute with pancreatic juice collected from their patient cohort to enable finding novel biomarkers. So if I understand correctly, it's not routinely collected as part of the diagnostic procedure, right?
No, so at the moment, within the Pacific trial, only Erasmus MC is collecting pancreatic juice, but currently other centers are starting doing it as well. Generally, it costs a little bit of time to set up the pipeline in a specific center. But if any participant of the Pacific trial is interested in collecting pancreatic juice, we are always happy to think along.
Okay, that's really, really exciting. Thank you for sharing that with us. And hopefully everyone can look out for the progression of this exciting study, because I think it's really novel and will hopefully really help with understanding and finding biomarkers for pancreatic cancer at an earlier stage. So to finish off, could you please summarize the conclusions that you drew from your findings?
Of course. In individuals with presumed neoplastic pancreatic cysts, CA99 is not independently associated with the development of high-grade dysplasia or pancreatic cancer. Also, CA99 monitoring led in our cohort to false positive values, causing harm due to substantial, unnecessary shortening of surveillance intervals and even surgery. This calls for critical appraisal of current recommendations on CA99 assessment and may lead to either omitting CA99 monitoring altogether or exploring the potential of a higher cutoff value, leading to higher specificity in combination with the highest achievable sensitivity.
Amazing. Iris, thank you so much for joining us and for telling us all about your great study, which if anyone has not yet still, I'd highly recommend it. And it was a pleasure to chat to you about your study, and we look forward to seeing the progression of the Pacific trial in the future.
The pleasure is all mine. Yes, thank you so much for letting me be part of this podcast. Thank you.
We hope you enjoyed this interview. And if you haven't already, please make sure to subscribe to our podcast wherever you get your episodes from. Thank you and see you again.
Meet our podcast hosts at UEG Week in Copenhagen. See you Tuesday, October 17th at 9:30 a.m.